Following has been approved for all audiences.
Trubisky throws an interception. Harrison Smith trying to spoil the debut for these Chicago Bear fans with the big pick. And there are field goal range after the turnover.
Based on what I've seen, I think there's probably a couple situations that, we're learning experiences for him. I think he'll build on that. I mean, based on what I've seen, he's, pretty even keeled guy. He's not too big. He's extremely accurate. Then just some of the decision-making things that you learn really by playing, regardless of the position, and particularly a quarterback.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. I've graded myself average to below average. I'm pretty hard on myself. Always think it could be better, and it will be. And just need to find more completions and continue to be more efficient.
He looked good. Athletic. He's a talented thrower. He can move. A very athletic guy. Made a lot of plays with his feet and his arm, on the run. So he looks like a dangerous quarterback.
Cheers, Bears fans. This is Bears on Tap. I am Aldo Gandia, and it is early Friday morning as I record this, and it's been quite the week. Trubisky week ended with a disappointing interception for the young man. But if you looked closely and you looked at what he did on the field, what he said off of it, and what other players and coaches say he did in the locker room, then you know we finally have someone very special to play the quarterback position here in Chicago. On this edition of Bears on Tap, we'll preview the upcoming match between the Baltimore Ravens and Chicago Bears, and we're very lucky to have Ken McCusick of RussellStreetReport.com. Ken, who you can find on Twitter, at FilmStudyRavens, has a great analytical mind. I truly could not have booked a better guest for the show. He'll join us shortly. But first, let me finish my opening thought. Monday night's loss to the Minnesota Vikings was definitely disappointing. Trubisky had a chance to write a storybook ending to his debut, but he failed. It was his fault, no one else's, and he knew it. He was accountable in front of the media, coaches, and teammates. You know why? Because Mitch Trubisky is special. It's not just his athletic talents, it's who he is as a man, a person. At Thursday's press conference, he was asked about the things he does in the locker room, like helping Josh sit and take off his shoulder pads after practice, and other acts of kindness.
I mean, I think it's important. I mean, it's not really about being a quarterback or really an athlete in general. I think it's just who you are as a person, just wanting to help people. And, I mean, the type of leader I am is just, I mean, how can I serve my teammates, So just being there for them, and, I mean, that's just how I was raised, so that's all I know. So it's nothing out of the ordinary for me, or that's just how I go about my day-to-day and be there for my teammates, and hopefully they know that, and they'll reciprocate it on the field.
Winning Super Bowls is very difficult. It takes talent, it takes good coaching, and it takes great leadership. This week, when you see Mitch Trubisky play his first professional game in a hostile environment, just don't look at how athletic he is, how accurate. Look closer and see a great leader in the making. Okay, as promised, with me is Ken McCusick from the RussellStreetReport.com. Ken, how are you today?
Life's good. How's it going with you, Aldo?
Excellent. Thank you very much. Let's get right into it. And I wanted to ask you about this 2017 version of the Baltimore Ravens. They've looked strong at times, particularly on defense, but weak other times, especially their passing offense. Is it fair to characterize this team as being all over the place?
Yeah, that'd be fair. In fact, there have been zero total lead changes in the five Ravens games so far. So every game has been the first score, the team never gave up the lead. So that tells you enough about how black and white the season has been, very little gray. And when they've been bad, they've been terrible in the 44-7 loss at Jacksonville in London versus Jacksonville in London, and the 26-9 loss at home to the Steelers. And when they've been good, they've been very good as well.
Now, let's dissect that Ravens offense, and let's begin first with the offensive line. You wrote at RussellStreetReport.com that the unit is coming off one of its best games in a decade. What was so impressive about that performance in their win over the Raiders last Sunday?
Well, they did a lot of things went well from an event basis. They had zero penalties at the line. They had no sacks allowed. They only allowed two quarterback hits, only three pressures as I scored it. They allowed one penetration, the line did, and that's allowing a tackle for loss by a running back, and one other tackle for loss was made that was not the responsibility of the line. So exceptional game from that perspective, and when you pile up those kind of statistics, it's virtually impossible not to score well because those are the negative scoring elements. They did have a fair number of missed blocks in the game, but it was less even than it was usually. So basically, to put it simply, everything went right. Four of the five players had their best game of the year, most by a long margin. Ryan Jensen, who's emerged as a fine center, was the only guy who was just a hair short of his best game of the year. So outstanding game across the line.
Now, over the course of the year, as you've charted them and looked at the film, what weaknesses have you detected in that offensive line?
Yeah, it's far from perfect. PFF grades it as the fourth highest offensive line right now. And if that's really true, I mean, I attribute a lot of that to the general weakness of offensive line play in the league. They've gotten good play out of both tackles, although the right tackle, Howard, has been up and down. Honestly, Stanley also had quite a bad game a couple weeks ago. But as a unit, they've been good, and Jensen's been good at center. The loss of Yonda was devastating after 1.5 games. They've been 3.5 games without the best guard in football, and they replaced him at first with Tony Bergstrom, who was a late pickup after camp. He flamed out in 1.5, and even though he's healthy, they've kept him inactive the last 2 weeks. They gave the job to Matt Skura, who was a practice squad player who got his first playing time in week 3, okay, to start. And then he shared that with a draft pick, Jermaine Illuminor, who is from London, in London. So that was kind of a cool story. Yeah. It'd be even a cooler story if Illuminor had really played well since he came on, and that really hasn't happened so far.
You know, I don't think that there's a team or a fan base that's totally happy with their offensive line nowadays. It's really kind of a sad state of affairs for offensive line play in the NFL.
Yeah, I don't know how much you follow baseball or whatever, but what I say is, you know, grading offensive linemen this year is like grading hitters in 1968, which was the ultimate year of the pitcher. I mean, it's very difficult. You have to kind of establish a new lower standard of expectation.
Yeah, didn't they lower the pitching mound shortly after 68?
That's correct. In 69, they lowered the mound and they got the offense back on track.
There you go. Well, let's talk about the quarterback, Joe Flacco. He appeared to me to be on the downside of his career, but his performance against the Raiders might suggest otherwise. It appears he feasted off that Oakland Raiders zone coverage. Am I right? And how has he performed against man-to-man coverages?
I think that the way that Joe Flacco has been troubled in the past has been whether a combination of man or zone, teams that have gotten successful four-man pressure against the Ravens, and that's true of any team, have been very successful at holding Joe Flacco down. He doesn't like to be rushed into a throw, and the thing that's been missing with Joe's injury this year is the ability to turn in and zip those mid-range throws. So, by example, I go back to this last game. Wallace averaged 44.3 yards per reception, 3 catches for 133, and the remainder of the Ravens receivers averaged 5.6 yards per reception. That's not 5.6 yards per pass. That would be bad. It's 5.6 yards per reception. So the lack of a mid-range passing game is very evident. If you want a guy who's responsible for that, I think Breshad Perriman has been the biggest bust on the line. He's had 26 yards receiving. He's their number one draft pick 3 years ago now, but he's had 26 yards receiving this year. And Danny Woodhead, who started only and played only the very first drive of the year for the Ravens, has 33 yards. He's out-received him in that period of time.
Who are the skill position players that are performing well for the Ravens right now? And what's the that running back situation looking like after Terrence West's injury? He's got an ankle injury. Is that correct?
That's right. He won't play. And West had been okay. And they've given the ball now to two other guys. Allen has been a decent running back. Buck Allen came from USC. And he honestly is getting a very low yards per touch. And that's despite the fact that PFF has reported that the Ravens are averaging 2.1 yards per carry before contact. So he's not making the most of the opportunity to break away, really lacks that burst you want in a running back. He has not been a good pass blocker, which is something that I really look for. And it's bad when you can't do really anything well. Probably his best game is as a third down receiver. He's had some short catches that have converted some. He had a good last drive against Oakland that looked well. The other guy who's getting some carries is Alex Collins. He was dumped by Seattle. A lot of Seattle fans are very upset about that. He had some fumbling problems, although he was a very good player at Arkansas. Came to the Ravens and have seen more fumbles. So he's fumbled in two straight games. Both of those times, he had 9 carries for 82 yards. Exactly. I've never seen that before. But, over 9 yards a carry in each game with a fumble. And out of necessity, the Ravens have to keep using him and are trying to train him to hold the ball differently. In the last game, he didn't fumble. So that's something. To have a third running back, the Ravens added Bobby Rainey, who is a guy they've cut a couple of times already, played a little bit in the NFC, and he's back this week to play against the Bears.
Statistically, the team rushing total doesn't look too bad. I think they're like 6th in the NFL, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, that's more a function of game situation than anything. Mm-hmm. I don't really believe the Ravens could be the 6th best team in terms of running the ball, given the talent they have at running back. But they've been ahead. And, when you're ahead in the second half, you run the game. The old saying, you don't win because you run because you win.
All right, there you go. Let's go over to the opposite line of the scrimmage. Defensively, that Ravens front 7 must be licking their chops after seeing Mitch Trubisky struggle against pressure in his debut. He's 1 of 7 for 9 yards when under pressure. Please profile this front 7 for us. And who are they and what do they do?
Now, there is a great Bears question there. I knew that would be a good one. Okay, so the Ravens started with an interior front 3 that really dominated the first couple of games. Brandon Williams, they gave a big contract to in the offseason, and he turned into an amazing pressure creator. He had 7 pressures in the first 2 games as I scored it, but he's had since suffered an injury and he's out. Brent Urban took over as the Iron Man defensive lineman, and he only played 14% of the snaps last year, hurt his first couple of years in the league, and he'd taken over and tremendously large guy, big hands. He would give any quarterback trouble, but when you play a shorter quarterback in particular, gets his arms up, causes all kinds of difficulties. Was playing the run well as well, but he's out also now. So the Ravens now have lost a third lineman, Carl Davis. And as Ravens fans, we kind of laugh. They kept 8 defensive linemen at the end of camp. And that's an awful lot of people to keep in a 3-4 defense, as you know. Mm-hmm. But they had a big depth of talent there, and they have used it now completely. And they've actually re-signed just this week Capron Lewis-Moore, who was an ex-player here for several years.
Defensive coordinator Dean Pease, he helped the front 7 amp up the pressure on Sunday against the Raiders. He blitzed a number of members of the secondary. What did you see on tape regarding those schemes? And if you can, please kind of provide an overall characterization of the secondary's play this season.
Okay, I mean, generally the secondary has been quite good. They've had 9 interceptions in 5 games. 8 of those came in the first 2 games, and that's the team as a whole, not just the secondary. But both corners are strong. In fact, they have 3 good long corners, and that's Jimmy Smith, Brandon Carr, who's an older guy but a press corner who's been very durable, and first-round draft pick Marlon Humphrey, who's getting some playing time now with Jimmy Smith having an Achilles injury. So they're very fortunately deep at corner, and not a lot of teams can do that. The Ravens always seem to be shorthanded at the outside corner positions. In the slot, they lost a very promising young player, Tavon Young, in the preseason. Since then, they moved Lardarius Webb back from safety to slot corner, and he's been okay. He's had a couple picks, but he is one of the players now, given the strength on the outside that other teams try and pick on, is him over the middle. And that's generally been the way. We didn't get to talk about the whole front seven there, but the inside linebacker position, the second one has been quite weak for the Ravens. They've been splitting it between Kimelai Correa and Patrick Owusu. And Owusu has won the starting job. Apparently, he played all but one snap last week. That was played by a Will linebacker in non-dime situations. And then Mosley is the other one. Mosley has tremendous understanding of what's going on behind him on a pass play, kind of like Ray Lewis did, but he's not really a great cover guy, and so the quarterbacks are trying to do a lot to pick on him as well. So good lane interference. He has a good ability to read the quarterback, but he does not cover guys one-on-one very effectively.
How are you pleased with the job that Dean Pease is doing as defensive coordinator? Not because this is his, what, sixth year there?
Yeah, it is his sixth year, and I'll tell you what I liked and what I didn't, and then I want to get into some of these blitzing schemes you asked me about before as well.
Absolutely.
So the first thing is Dean Pease came to Baltimore with a philosophy, I think, that is very different from previous coordinators here. So, you know, the Bears' 46 defense, of course, is legendary. In Baltimore, they have always run things with the dime. So the dime has been the defense dime has been the package that has really done it for the Ravens over the years. Even the 2000 Ravens played 34.5% dime and quarter snaps, so six or seven defensive backs on the field. During Pease's era, prior to this year, they'd only played 2.7% dime the whole time. So their answer on every third down play was to still have two inside linebackers on the field and play the nickel. So that's been something that I haven't liked over the years. But this year, largely out of necessity, because the second inside linebacker spot's been quite weak, they've used Anthony Levine in the dime, and they've now played about 23.5% dime snaps this year. So back into a kind of a normal level, as you'd expect for many NFL teams. Mm-hmm. So I've been happy with that scheme-wise. I'll give you the other scheme notes that I have. Pease was rushing exclusively four early in the season, not rushing any numbers and not using any blitzes to speak of. He had 13 individual blitzes in the last game against Oakland because I think that he figured getting pressure on Manuel was going to be the best way to fluster him, and that the offensive line was not going to be easy to beat in the one-on-one matchups, and I think he was right about that. So they did get some pressure. They got two of the three sacks from the secondary. And they had eight blitzes from the secondary among 13 total individual blitzes. And those are players lining up at least 1.5 yards off the line of scrimmage or at least as far out as the slot receiver. One of their sacks was a sack by Jefferson that came off a double slot blitz. So that's the kind of thing that you like to see when you if you're really looking for creativity. Mm-hmm. So I appreciated that.
What's the let me ask you about the Ravens special teams play. Anything, any glaring weaknesses, outstanding players that we fans here in Chicago should know about?
You probably know about Justin Tucker, so I don't think we need yeah, to say anything more about him. You know, one of the big legs in all of football and certainly one of the game's most accurate kickers ever. Sam Cook has been a good in-20 punter for many years and a guy who has revolutionized punting in a lot of ways, with various ways that he'll turn and flip the ball. He'll go for the line drive punt to elude the receiver and outkick him at times, and he'll go for the high booming punt to get covered when that's appropriate as well. He has good ability to put backspin on the ball, so he's one of the real strengths. The Ravens don't have a special return guy on either end. They've been having Alex Collins, who's the running back with fumbling problems, return kicks, and most of those had been just touchbacks that were not returned. Campanero has been their punt returner, and he's got injury problems, but hasn't been special in terms of breaking a punt return yet. So I don't think there's anything really special in terms of a special team player that's going to hurt the Bears.
Here in Chicago, we may be looking for a new head coach at the end of the year. That's not inside information. That's more of a wish on my part.
Okay.
How is Harbaugh standing in Baltimore?
yeah, that's a good question. I think he was deemed as being on the ropes when the season started. His contract has already been extended by a year, so through 2018. But I think that is really just a severance package situation. Mm-hmm. So if you're a coach, you want to be under contract for the next year, so you're not looking over your shoulder. And Bisciotti is a very generous owner anyway, and is, you know, is looking to make him feel good about that. They've had a lot of injuries this year. There's been talk that part of it is the very, very physical camp that Harbaugh runs, and And there may be some of that. It may be the strength coaching. It may be other things. And it may just be bad luck. But the Ravens have been injured a lot the last three seasons in total, and that's caused a lot of complaints about that. Both the offensive and defensive coordinators, I think, both are on the chopping block at this point. Morningweg probably more so than Pease with the results so far in 2017. So the offensive coordinator's in more trouble.
Yeah, there's an injury epidemic throughout the NFL. We've had quite a few injuries here to Chicago Bears players. I think we had the 16 players on IR last season. We're on our way to probably having 16 this season. And I keep telling Bears fans, this is just not a Chicago problem. This is a league-wide problem. It could be the CBA that is the issue, that's limited practices and some conditioning. I don't know exactly what it is, but it's something that the league has to address. Wouldn't you say?
I mean, I think it would be good if they could figure out the root of the problem. Yeah. The Ravens already have 16 on IR this year, by the way.
So
they're on the way to a massive number, a franchise record for sure. But they might have had 10 when the season began, just from the players lost since June 1 to various things. So It's been a very, very tough year for the Ravens. And when you pick up an IR count like that, it really has a huge impact on your cap. They've had they've had to borrow a lot from future cap to find the players to replace them.
Hmm. What are your expectations for the game on Sunday?
Well, the Ravens are at home, and I certainly would hope they win, but I'm sure you would also hope the Bears win. In terms of how I think the game will be played, I think the Ravens will play it the way they've had their three wins. If they can manage to get a lead, they'll try and immediately put pressure on the opposing quarterback, and they play a series of young and second-string quarterbacks right now in a row, and there's a good chance that we'll see a lot of running in this game. I think if you look at what the Bears are vulnerable to, I think they're more vulnerable to the run than to the pass right now. And that is also the Ravens' strength. So I think that they'll try and use the offensive line again, get into level two, see if that inside linebacker situation after all the injuries to the Bears on Monday night has really resolved and if they're together communication-wise.
Have you, in your film study, have you detected that the Ravens approach their defensive schemes differently when they're playing a young quarterback?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, they'll blitz a lot more when they're playing a young quarterback. And the blitz also for the characteristics of the quarterback. So a shorter quarterback, they want to try and emphasize interior pressure and hands up and things like that. And they've been very effective at doing that. They've batted down a lot of passes. The last two games, Willie Henry has emerged as a very key defender with four passes defense, three quarterback hits, and also some good run defense. So they've got the tools on the line to do that. Now, Trubisky's a bigger guy, but he's still, everybody is vulnerable to having passes defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Vic Fangio, the defensive coordinator here in Chicago, said that different teams have different philosophies, and some defensive coordinators will want to drop more people in coverage against a rookie quarterback, and others will just go get after them. So we'll be watching that Ravens blitz on Sunday.
He's a mobile guy, so I think it makes sense for the Ravens to employ one of two strategies. Either put a spy on him, and they've got the personnel for that. Either Peanut Onwuso can do it, or they can put Levine on it on third down in the dime package. So Trubisky is a threat to run on any place. I would want to have a spy for that, or have extremely controlled rush lanes, which means you're giving up something in your pass rush. You're willing to take more chances at blocking a pass and have less chance to get to the quarterback directly. So I think one of those two strategies we'll see, and I do expect the Ravens will stick with a 7 or 8 in coverage on a fairly high percentage of plays.
Ken, anything else that you think we Chicago Bears fans should know about the Baltimore Ravens?
No, that's great, Aldo. Really appreciate you having me on.
Listen, it's been fun for me to finally interview somebody in my own age bracket. Ken, tell people where they can find you. We've got a lot of followers on Twitter here that love to look at tape. And based on what I've seen from your work, you're one of the best at the business at breaking it down. Please let our followers know where they can find you.
Okay, appreciate that. I'm on Russell Street Report, and the column name is Film Study. If you look for it, that you can get there. The way I do is a little bit different than other sites. Every site will give you every individual clip. I tend to give you the order time references, and you use your own Game Pass subscription to go back and see if I'm full of crap. So, and I'll describe the play to you. I am a big proponent of transparency in terms of making sure that people have the same opportunity, great offensive line play, for example. And I also, if you're an NFL season ticket holder, I believe this is true in Chicago as well, you should be getting a free Game Pass subscription from your team.
That is correct. Very good, Ken. I really appreciate your time and expertise, and have fun watching the game Sunday.
All right. Take it easy, Aldo.
Okay. Bye-bye. The Bears and Ravens will meet for the sixth time only in history, and it will be fun to see Mitch Trubisky go to MNT Bank Stadium and duel against this nasty Ravens defense. This was how John Fox appraised the defense at Thursday's press conference.
I think they're a pretty complex scheme. They do a lot of things, regardless of situationally. They do a lot. They have some veteran guys that tie it together. I think they've been that way for a long time. We competed against a lot of them in the past. They have good players that are opportunistic. I think they had a bunch of takeaways on defense, which obviously helps your offense. They've got a good blend of youth and experience. Whether it's in whatever level of their defense, I always think it's important. Because communication is key, especially when it's playing such a fast game. So that's kind of my first impressions.
In Baltimore, Coach Harbaugh was asked, "What is the biggest challenge a rookie quarterback has facing the Ravens?"
Well, probably two things. Probably the crowd, first of all. Our crowd knows football. We have a very football savvy fan base. And they get in that stadium, they do what they can to affect the game, which is very valuable for us. And then the other thing is our defense. Our defense putting pressure on quarterbacks in ways that make them think, and try to do that, under the crowd, the dome of the sound, which makes it harder to communicate.
A reporter pointed out that Harbaugh's defense usually has lots of success against rookie quarterbacks and asked whether it was the exotic schemes Harbaugh employs.
Yeah, I do think that, Ed. I think it's part of it. We've been able to confuse. It's not so much just rookie quarterbacks, but that's a big part of it, because they're probably going to be most affected by game plan problems that you present them. But you try to do that with every quarterback you face, and that's something that I think coming to Baltimore that teams are pretty aware of.
In a press conference a week ago, John Harbaugh told reporters that the Ravens' game plan changes week to week, sometimes dramatically, sometimes subtly. But this week, he answered a question about the one constant that remains week to week with the Ravens, and that is they try to impose their will on the opposing team.
Well, yeah, that's the thing you try to do every week. I mean, that's what you do try to do, and I think it's a good point. How you want to play the game and how you plan to play the game is what you shoot for. And that's really what imposing your will is, whether it's running the ball or protecting the quarterback or completing passes downfield or blitzing or stopping the run. Whatever those big picture things are, those are the things that allow you to play the way you want to play. It doesn't always play out that way. That's what the week-to-week part of that is, but that's what you shoot for.
Finally, Harbaugh was asked how satisfying it was a week ago against the Raiders when every part of the game plan worked to perfection.
Well, I don't know. I probably wouldn't use the word satisfying. It's important to be able to execute your game plan, right? I mean, you can't be one-dimensional because you're not executing well. If they take something away, if they over-defend something, then you'd like to think that you can attack them in a different way. But if you're taking away elements of your game in any phase of football because you're just not executing something, that's self-inflicted. That's just the opposite of imposing your will. And that's what you try to avoid.
Every week on Bears on Tap, I collect a series of sound bites from the head coaches. And every week I hear this stark contrast. On one side, there's the articulate, thoughtful responses of a Mike Tomlin or a John Harbaugh. And on the other, there is the stammering, semi-coherent, sometimes dishonest remarks by John Fox. That's why today, on Friday, October 13th, 2017, we are officially launching our latest campaign, #FireFox. If you go to bearsbarroom.com, you'll see two new posts. one explaining why we're starting this campaign, and the other featuring a mini movie that captures the irritation-inducing harm Fox creates on Bears fans. From Canada to Brazil, all across Europe and down to Dubai, we are hearing Bears fans express their utter discontent with John Fox. Here at the Barroom, we've kind of stumbled onto this activist role. First, it was our campaign, hashtag Trubisky Now. It helped give a unifying voice to fans who could clearly see that the rookie quarterback was far superior in skills and leadership abilities than the veteran. That giraffe gaffe had to be rectified, and our collective voices were at the very least a way to vent our frustration and send a message to Hallis Hall. Now with hashtag FireFox, we want to add some heat to our message, because what we've learned is that the decision makers at Hallis Hall cannot be trusted. As I write at bearsbarroom.com, they can't get much of anything right, from having a professional playing surface at Soldier Field to the management of their website and social media platforms. And when it comes to football decisions, well, believe it or not, the voice of the people appears to be more correct than theirs. Visit the Barroom's website for more information as we intensify our efforts with the hope that Fox is fired by October 30th. An interim coach can be installed, and Ryan Pace can be given a second chance to begin designing a coaching staff, this one that will properly develop his prized quarterback, devise effective game strategies and schemes, and give us someone much more interesting to listen to during these press conferences. That's Bears on Tap for this week. We'll be back on Monday with an all-new Bears Hour Live at 9 p.m. Central. And if something happens that merits we talk with each other earlier than that, we'll be prepared to do just that. Just follow us on Twitter at Bears Barroom or go to our Facebook page where we'll keep you posted on any new news. For the Bears Barroom Radio Network, I'm Aldo Gandia.